welcome to Unsigned 518's Halloween episode.
Sorry, had something in my throat. Welcome to Unsigned 518's Halloween episode. The way I'm going to do this is I'm actually going to release this in two parts just because I have so much content. I've been working on this episode on and off for several weeks. And rather than release like a, possibly like 2.5 hour or more episode, I'm going to break it up into two parts, make it a little easier to digest. I will release them both at the exact same time so that if you listen to this, which is obviously part one, and you want to roll on to part two, you can do so immediately. And if you want to move on with your spooky Halloween day without me, fine. So on this episode, I've got a few segments. I'm going to do a sit-down conversation with Andy Iorio. He's a classical pianist, a good friend of mine, and knows a lot about music theory and horror movies. So we're going to talk about movies and music and kind of how they go together. I'm also going to sit down with Kate and Mike of the band Lucid Street. Kate is also a horror movie fan, and we talk about a little bit about Terrifier and Art the Clown and some horror movies and music, and then we get into Lucid Street's music, and they're actually releasing a single which comes out this weekend, but you can hear it here on this episode for the very first time ever, and that will be after the conversation with Kate and Mike. Also, I'm just going to play some music. I've got some spooky music. I asked on Instagram for people to send me any spooky 518 music they know of or that they've made or been a part of. And I'm just going to, pop some songs in here and there from 518 artists with a Halloween theme. And then we're going to get on with it. So I guess without further ado, let's get started with Unsigned 518's Halloween episode 2024. I'm not sure if you can tell, but this is like my favorite time of the year. But let's do it.
It's motherfucking Andy.
Just hanging around
with some local motherfuckers in the Dazzle Den. If you're in a local band and you're passing through town, stop by after this
when the creepies come out.
You're at the Dazzle Den.
So, and what you just heard right there was Forensic Polaroids featuring Nick Kosser of Gozer with the song called The Dazzle Den, which is, written about the place where I'm currently standing right now. I'm actually standing directly underneath the orange neon sign that says Dazzle Den. It's my garage, my hangout spot, my studio, our practice space. But so I've been using that kind of on and off as a theme song to the Weekend Spotlight. I've got the Simple Machine penned theme song for Unsigned 518, and I was using that for the Weekend Spotlight as well, and then Forensic Polaroids, Lonnie, who I'm in a band with, short radio band, wrote that song for me, and I've been peppering that in. But just the other day, something interesting happened, and this episode was already well on its way when I got it, but I had reached out to Girth Control, who, as many know, are like my favorite ska punk band, and I dig like every song they've ever written. And I said to them, because they had put out an album that was all really short songs, like 20, 30 second songs, and I was like, hey, at some point, if you get time, do you think you'd be able to write a jingle or a theme song for the Weekend Spotlight? And, they were like, yeah, absolutely. And then, kind of not forgot about it, but, went about our ways, like with a little time passing. And then just yesterday I got an email like, hey, the jingle is done and here it is. And it's fucking amazing. So going forward, it is going to be the Weekend Spotlight theme song. But right now, just because I literally couldn't wait till next week, because this is this episode is taking place the Weekend Spotlight today. But anyway, I couldn't wait. So without further ado, let's check out Girth Control's new theme song for the Weekend Spotlight.
Weekend Spotlight, the weekend, all right. The Weekend Spotlight, the weekend, all right. Andy Scullin is such a good dude. The kind of guy that it's easy to talk to. He's got some cool stuff he'd like to share with you.
Yeah, you.
It's the weekend.
You know what you should do. It's the Weekend Spotlight, the weekend, all right.
Girth Control with the Weekend Spotlight theme song. I love it. It's awesome. Thank you so much, guys. And if you're not familiar with Girth Control, go check them out. Mark, Bob, and Jay, super nice guys, great songwriters, really fun to hang out with, and very fun to see live and to listen to. So, Girth Control. Thank you. And I should note, you know, normally the underscore music that I'm playing while I'm talking is Formative Years by Ab the Autocrat, which has kind of become my official Unsigned 518, not theme song, but official underscore music by Ab the Autocrat. And I just wanted to note that the spooky music that you're hearing now, kind of like that X-Files vibe, is also Ab the Autocrat. So the statement holds true that my underscore music is all still by Ab the Autocrat. And again, go check him out on Spotify. And his collaborations with some of the hip-hop artists in the area are really, really fucking top-notch. So go check out Ab the Autocrat. And right now we're going to hear a song from the Jagaloons. This one is called Wolfman's Got Nards. And if you don't get that reference, I won't leave you hanging. I'll let you know. It is a reference to the classic Monster Squad, where they tell him just, you know, kick the Wolfman in the nards, but then they're like, Wolfman doesn't have nards. Spoiler alert, Wolfman's got nards. It's the Jagaloons on Unsigned 518's Halloween special. Wolfman's Got Nards, the Jagaloons here on Unsigned 518's Halloween special. And right now, what we're going to do is check in on my conversation with Andy Iorio. Andy and I go back a long way. We've known each other for years. He played the piano at my wedding, you know, along with Dave Tayo, who was playing the classical guitar when we were doing the walking down the aisle. So he's a personal friend. I've known him for a long time. He's also a brilliant musician. He's a classical pianist. He's got an impressive catalog. He also knows music very well and is into horror movies and is into horror music and has kind of been absorbing these things his whole entire life. So it's an unplanned conversation, you know, but really he just came over and we sat down and we're like, well, we'll figure something out. We'll hit record. And this is the result of that. So we'll be right back with my conversation with Andy Iori. All right, welcome back. I am here with Andy Iorio. How's it going, man?
Hey, man. It's good to be back.
Yeah, and we talked about doing this, I mean, I think it was like mid-summer at some point.
You it was, yeah, like, when I came in originally, and we both had a love for horror movies, so I was like, you know, we got to do a thing. Like, we got to talk about something.
Yeah, and I was like, you know, I think maybe you were like, well, since you know, like, obviously music theory, you know,
sure.
And you know horror movies and horror music, we'll talk that angle. And then if, you know, whatever it devolves into.
Whatever happens, happens, man. It's, you know.
But I guess first and foremost, you know, we were saying before we got going, as far as iconic themes go.
Absolutely,
like,
yeah.
John Carpenter's Halloween.
Oh, one of my faves, for sure.
So, and you have you said a deep relationship with it. You used to listen to the soundtrack when you were going to sleep.
Well, sure. I mean, I wouldn't actually listen to horror music when I went to sleep because that would be kind of interesting. But when I was a kid, I used to watch the Halloween movie. Like, I just put on the original Halloween movie every Halloween night. Now, I mean, obviously, I'd get back home, like, you know, early, late, whatever. So I sometimes, mostly, 90% of the time, fall asleep. And the movie would still be on. And I had a surround sound system in my bedroom at the time. So, you know, like, all the loud jump and scares and like noises and synth sounds that he did, I'd literally just wake up in the middle of like a something totally random, or like the sound, and it was like, you know, I mean, just jolt you out of sleep. And it just like, I have those fond memories when I was a kid doing that. But it was that was just a lot of fun. But yeah, the thing with John Carpenter is just like that original. I mean, if you know about that movie, like, he just didn't originally, they pitched it and there was no music in it.
Yeah.
So when they, you know, when the guys are like, it's just not scary, it's just like a slasher film. Like, it's, you know, it's like it needs something else. And he, just being the director, you know, didn't, you know, have a, they didn't have a budget for a composer.
But he also had a very strong musical background.
Exactly.
It's like he came from a musical family.
Very true. So the fact that he was like, okay, so he went and just wrote this music, just like whatever, like one of the first things he ever did. And it's just like today, it's just one of the, like, just a theme that you just, everybody knows what that is. It's just really cool that he was able to create something like that that still stands.
And the timing on what it's, is it 5/4?
I think so. 7? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It depends how you count it. If I had a keyboard, I'd be able to, like,
well, he, whatever the timing, you know, because I heard on like some podcast that he was
like
saying
10, you count it in 10, kind of, because it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's how like I always thought about it. So, but yeah, it's just like, it's just one of those things, just like the whole chromatic thing. I mean, it's just, I mean, chromatic microtones, you know, minor seconds, like,
yeah,
in Psycho.
See, that's why you're here, dude. Yeah. Like, well, yeah. I'm like, yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, those are the things that like just create that tension, you know, tritones, even like that, like the sharp four, that's kind of just like, those are things that like a lot of composers utilize along with the atmospheric sounds. But, you know, going back to even Bernard Herrmann, which was like, you know, doing the original, you know, Hitchcock stuff. I mean, those themes were just like, you know, I mean, you hear two notes like Psycho up together, like, you know, shit's gonna happen,
right?
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right. Very minimalist.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, like, this is nice. You know, it's like, oh, the music created so much of the tension.
And is that something that's like almost like mathematically ingrained in music? That, you know, because I know, like, I was talking to Kate from Lucid Street earlier about, like, you know, that low droning note that'll like create dread, even if something that you can't really hear.
Right. Oh, that's a frequency. There's like, I forgot what the frequency was, but yes, there's actually something that actually makes people uneasy.
Yeah.
And they throw that into a lot of like movies like that, like
under
subliminally.
The score.
Kind of,
yeah, yeah.
And that's
now,
great.
But is that something that, like, excuse me, with the notes together, and you were talking about like the triads and whatever, is that something that like kind of works like that almost no matter how you play it, or is it just like
it's kind of, I don't know, if you kind of put stuff together, like I used to, when I was a kid, I used to I don't remember if I told you that before, but I used to like mute these movies because I was always into film music, so I would mute movies that I didn't see and just watch the images, and I'd try to come up with music on my little synthesizer, sat in front of the keyboard, put the keyboard in front of the TV, and I'd sit there and try to like score what was going on, not ever hearing what was there before, and just by looking at the moving images, because that's really what like the whole score thing was about. And I think when you ever do score something, it's really just about like, is silence, you know, better than what you're doing?
Right.
You know what I mean? Because the actors do a lot on their own, but like, are you enhancing the scene? Are you doing too much with it? And when I studied that in college, like it was just like, you know, like that's really what it all came down to. Like, is nothing or silence, you know, better than what I'm doing? You know, and that's where you kind of pick and choose your things. I mean, obviously there's scare points in this part where you're going to hit things and it's just like
stingers.
Yeah, sure, know. Exactly. Just to enhance stuff. But like, I mean, when you're thinking about like theme wise, you know, that's like one of the trickiest things, you know, because I mean, when I started doing that kind of stuff, it was just more difficult to think about like, how is this really going to be, this musical theme going to capture the essence of this character? And I used to try to think about it as characters and then have like an overall arc at the end, you know what I mean? Because you want to start somewhere and end somewhere. And then kind of have like this little stuff in the middle. But I don't think that answered your question, but I did tell you that anyway.
No, I forgot the question, but that was fantastic.
Something about the tritones and the whatever, but I was like
you know, like, what's like the DSC array? Like, you've got to know the DSC array, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's something that, like, when it's used,
right.
It's used to signify. And what notes are those? That's like a dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, right? I don't know exactly what the notes are, but I know what you're talking about. Or the Shepherd scale that like always sounds like you're descending. If you ever listen to it like this.
It might be that. I know.
Well, there's that too, though, that has like a, and it just has this, like, if you listen to it, like if you just Google it or it's on Wikipedia, you can like listen to it, but it's the same repetitive notes over and over again. But it constantly sounds like it keeps going down. Like your ear.
Then that could be it just, exactly.
And you're always,
like
it's like
what
no matter what, it's always falling, and you're like, where is this going? You know.
Right, and it like apparently you know always like signifies like doom and death.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like you know,
but that's what I say, the minor seconds and like those the tritone, which is like an augmented fourth, which is also the theme in they use in The Simpsons. You know, that, like the Simpsons. It's like this like.
Dun, dun,
it's
a,
yeah,
dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, yeah, it's like that, or like the Tales from the Crypt theme. You know, had like a lot of that. And yeah, I mean
that was
just,
Danny Elfman too, wasn't it?
That was Danny Elfman, yeah, absolutely.
Tales from the Crypt.
Yep, which is was very fun. And I saw something that they're bringing that back for like 10 episodes, but I think it's bullshit.
Yeah, probably.
I haven't seen anything on John Cassier's site or anything that would say like.
Did you see Creepshow?
Oh, of course. I didn't watch the new one yet. That's what we were just talking about on the way, because we watched the old ones and we're like, you know, should we check out the new ones? Because
no,
so many
good.
Reboots suck.
They're really
but
good.
If you saw it, I mean, yeah. I'll check it out. Is it? Like,
yeah. I mean, they're not like every single one of them isn't fantastic.
Right. But
like,
it's worth checking out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then I would definitely will.
Yeah. It was very good. I think.
Very cool.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Nicotero is involved in it.
Cool.
Nicotero.
Right
like,
on.
From OG stuff. But anyway, so getting back to like music, you
we
know,
digress,
which is,
we digress
like a lot. So we've got the whatever timing it was, like 7/8 or 9/10 or
yeah.
Whatever.
Well, I always just counted it in 10. Whenever I played it, I was just like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2, 3, and that's just how I like.
But he
it.
Got that from his father teaching him that rhythm. So like, it's just the clap.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And so he like put it together in like 2 fucking seconds.
I know, and it's like, oh, and then he bring it back, and it's like all of a sudden there's like this like, okay, now we'll release the movie, like, and,
right.
You know, it's like it's crazy,
and it made it, you know, and there's been, you know, obviously, you know, we'll move like past Halloween, like into like my favorite franchise, Friday the 13th, mm-hmm. which was clearly taken from, you know, like Carpenter started the horror. Not the horror genre, but like, you know,
right. No, I know what you
kickstarted
mean, yeah.
It.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, Sean Cunningham was riding on that and kind of ripping. He was
sure.
Fucking ripping it off. Like,
right.
He was ripping it off.
Right.
And
yeah, but it works, though. I mean, like,
it
and
works.
People, and people keep coming to see it. I mean, horror is still, I think it's still the number one. Like,
yeah.
I mean, people
and
still come to see
that, I think,
movies.
Works because of Manfredini.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
If you watch that movie, even if you watch that movie with like a Carpenter-esque score, if you
right.
Like did Friday the 13th with an emulated, you mm. know, if they kind of ripped off that sound of the, it, I don't think it would have worked as well. Like,
probably not.
The,
no, I agree. Absolutely.
The score makes that whole thing, and that's why, like, I'm and Katie thinks I'm crazy because, like, I will put on Friday 13th Part 1 soundtrack on vinyl and like on a Sunday morning put on the vinyl and just sit there and like, you know, smoke a bowl, listen to, drink some coffee, and she'll be like, are you listening to a horror movie soundtrack to like relax?
Oh, yeah. I'd say 20% of my score collection or more is probably horror movie scores for sure. I mean, I just love, I mean, the classic ones just all the way through. And I mean, it just makes, I mean, a great score will stand alone. It'll be great anyway. You know, you don't even have to watch it with a movie. But I mean, a lot of the time, the nostalgia purposes of listening to it, like you remember the scene, you know, which is cool.
The cool thing about the soundtrack is at the end of, you know, spoilers throughout this whole fucking episode.
Spoilers.
I've said it in the beginning, but like in the end of Friday the 13th, you know, with the reveal that Jason comes out of the water and like and grabs her or whatever, that stinger is in a random place,
right?
Like it's not in beat, it's not, it doesn't make sense in the way of the song because it's supposed to catch you off guard. And on the soundtrack, like it's not in a place where you would expect it, it's literally like a jump scare in the composition, like because when you're listening to it, it catches you off guard. You're like, you know, Fly Away Tiny Sparrow, I believe, is the also Manfredini, but it's the name of the composition. You know, it's all it, and they did that on purpose. They were like, with the music, we're gonna assure the audience that the danger is gone. They're like, you know, you see the cops on the on the shore, and like the music, like doesn't lie. The music doesn't lie, and then you find out the music fucking lies, and then you know, and that was like the most effective.
Yeah, it's cool. That's great, especially that makes it really. I mean, that just gives you the, you know, the extra. I don't even know what you say. Just the, well, as you said, the jump scare. That's just like that's what it's about.
Yeah, and the music drove that scene, and without it,
have you ever been able to see any of those movies without the music in them?
No.
So when I was in school, when I went to Berkeley, they had, in the film scoring department, they had a bunch of movies that, like, didn't have the music. Like, it was, like, their
dialogue, but no music?
Just, it was just, like, the whole acting, but no music. So it was, like, before they added it. So really, like, such a different, like, I think it was The X-Files, one of the episodes of that, and I ended up watching that, and we had to write music to it. You know, that was, like, one of our assignments. And it was crazy to think, like, it's so boring. Like, some people probably don't pay attention to the music. I mean, I'm a dork, so I totally pay attention to the music in the movies. I would just, like, I'm like, oh, I'm all about the score. You can even ask my wife once in a while. Like, I'll be like, oh, that's such a great cue. Or like, oh, I wouldn't have done that. You know, one of those in the movie theater. But it's like, without it, it's just so empty. But I think a normal, like, average person that wouldn't listen to that or tune into it would notice if it wasn't there.
Right.
But when it is there, it's just like, oh, it's just part of the movie experience. You know what I mean? So but I'm always just like, oh, that cue, or oh, that cue. That's so cool what they're doing there. And the, I don't know, the Insidious movies. Did you watch those?
Yeah.
Love the Joseph Bishara did, like, really cool, that stringy rise. It was kind of like the Bernard Herrmann classic style. Yeah, like, just really cool. And I was like, you don't hear scores like that because most of the time now, even it's all like sounds and synths and like different stuff. It's not as much of the orchestra anymore, but he kind of utilized that. And he's in a composer group, you know, for the HMMAs that I'm a part of. And he's just like really cool. And I just told him, I was like, dude, I just loved the Insidious score. Like, this is the first one. Like, it just brought back like that amazing feeling of using the strings in the way that Herman did and everything. And he was like, oh, thanks, man. I really appreciate that. I'm like, yeah, totally. Like, I appreciated that. And just really cool because it's just like, that just kind of grabbed me that I was like, you don't hear scores like that as much anymore.
And then, you know, it's funny too how, you know, obviously, you know, scores for these movies were made for the movies. They were made to capture the tension. They were made to, like, drive the narrative. But then there's some instances, like The Exorcist, where the theme has nothing to do with anything spooky at
all. It's like source music almost, though, right? Because it wasn't written for the movie.
It was already released.
Yeah, it was,
you know, Tubular Bells by Mike Oldfield, and it was a release.
Have you listened to that whole thing?
Oh, absolutely.
I listened to the whole piece.
Dude, I worked at an easy listening station. My first radio job in 1992 was at an easy listening station. We played Mike Oldfield all the time, and we used to play Tubular Bells just like it was like, what, two, you know, it was like, there's that spooky hit, Tubular Bells, you know.
That's interesting,
it
was just though, like, that there would be a lot of his stuff was new agey, of course.
Oh,
too.
Yeah, it's
Tubular
wicked
Bells 2 and 3 that he did, and like, totally, did all those, but Yeah. So that was just, I mean, there is an eeriness to it, though, that, like, totally works.
But not really, like, unless, like, you...
Well, I know, unless you've seen The Exorcist, like, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, or now, even if right. you haven't seen The Exorcist, it's, like, in the lexicon. Like, yeah. you know, when you hear that, you're like, ooh, spooky.
Right.
But, like, and I wonder if he's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, right.
Like, he's like, That's a song like commemorating my lovely grandmother, and yeah, everybody right. thinks it's
I was
20
years
creepy.
Old or something when he wrote right. that. He's like this yeah. masterpiece yeah. thing that he does, like, and they're using it for this, and it's like they just associate it with that.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, it's interesting how music takes shape like that, though. But yeah, that's interesting because a lot of movies, like, you know, use source music like that, or even The Shining used a bunch of source music, you know, and like there wasn't even stuff like, I mean, Wendy Carlos did a bunch of the music, but there was also source music throughout,
and that Kubrick, like, did that a definitely lot. Used like The Shining definitely used that doom and dread.
Oh, totally.
Like,
absolutely,
almost sounds like a tugboat dying in like quarter speed, you know.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's more tension, but
right.
I mean, it worked, though.
But,
I mean, it totally
but
did.
Like, that's a little more in your face, I guess, like, you know, not as subtle, because
right.
like that is soon, like.
Well, that's more like the atmosphere that they're trying to
right.
create as well.
And
like it's noise
and
sounds and things.
You can't help but be
yeah,
like,
right.
God damn it, I'm uncomfortable right. in the hell. You
yeah,
know what
no,
I mean?
Exactly.
So like that like really fits for that, you know, because I guess the music even progresses as the movie does as far
yeah.
as, well, other right. than that opening shot.
Right.
That opening shot does. And I think that's the Dies Irae.
Yeah.
Burr, burr,
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like,
that could be that. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. I haven't watched that movie again, too.
Yeah. See,
speaking of which, I got to watch all the movies I haven't watched yet this year.
I have. Is it up there in my costumes? No, somewhere. I have a officially licensed Jack Torrance red
oh, nice.
Corduroy
sweet
jacket. You know, from
was that what you were wearing when I came in? No, that was your lumberjack.
No, that was just my lumberjack,
yeah.
And I can't wear it with the orange because, like I said, I look like a fucking hunter.
I know,
like,
it's funny though. I was like, I like it. It works.
Yeah, it works, except for when you're in Schuylerville in October.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
People would be like, "Hey, did you get anything? What are you guys talking about? I drive an Impreza." Like,
exactly.
Never shot anything. So no offense to hunters. But
oh no, none at all.
It's just not. Not
me
my,
either.
It's not my bag.
It's not my bag either.
Like, I've never killed anything, and I'm pretty cool. Pretty cool with keeping that streak. You know, and it's funny for
you
someone
just watch
who,
it. But
yeah, I was just going to say, for someone who enjoys
yeah, right, just
seeing
watching. I've
somebody,
never actually pulled the trigger, but...
No,
you know,
no, I
or
just like
throw
to watch
a knife or,
people get it yeah. in the worst ways.
Sure.
So is there any other scores that we'd like want to mention before we wrap up?
Let me see, other scores. I mean, I was just saying to you earlier that, like, I haven't watched the whole 30 movies I wanted to do in October, you know. It's like I was able to do that more when I was younger, but, you know, as an adult, it's a lot harder to
who's
watch a
time?
Movie at night. I mean, I really wanted to. Every year I'm like, oh man, 30 days, like, it's Halloween. It's like we've really watched like 5 movies in the
yeah.
whole month of October, and like yeah, we watch a bunch of Unsolved Mysteries episodes, which are kind of scary.
You
I
know
mean,
what
still,
you know what I've been on is Ghost Adventures.
I haven't actually watched them.
There's a channel, a free
okay.
channel on Pluto TV or whatever,
oh, nice.
And it's just fucking Ghost Adventures.
That's fun.
And it just runs.
Well, that kind of counts.
24 hours a day, yeah.
But, I mean, some of those murders that happen on Unsolved Mysteries and some of the UFO things, I mean, that counts as scary
dude,
shit.
Dude, Unsolved
I mean,
Mysteries, when I remember
but
when
the
I
stack
was a
episodes,
kid,
too,
like,
though, I'm saying.
Yeah,
like,
it's got to be
a like,
stack episode.
Maybe you. Unsolved
yeah.
Mystery. I'm like,
and like
no,
13 year old me was like,
yes.
I can't do shit.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, I can
I was
barely
like, I don't
wake
wanna
up to
do
get
shit.
To the bus
like,
on time. You know,
like, I saw that car right. from Unsolved Mysteries. That's the same car. Like, I'm like, I was seeing it everywhere. And then the alien abduction ones, forget about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that stuff scared the hell out of me when I was a kid.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen you. I've seen UFOs.
Yeah.
I've
and
seen
that
multiple
theme, let alone
UFOs.
Unsolved Mysteries theme, should be in the horror theme because that thing is creepy.
Which that's no, like, that was the X-Files.
Oh
right,
and the new series, the one that came
and then
back,
Robert
though?
Stack. While
yeah.
that part is going, he's like smoking like 17 cigarettes at a time,
yeah. and he's always in some dark park that has like a light yeah. with his trench coat. It's like, where do they film these?
With the it's all just in like
this?
The corner of someone's
so
office
in the
80s, or
but,
something.
You know, whatever. But the yeah. new theme though.
I haven't heard the
Netflix.
New
they just re-released the series, so like, and there's some really good ones, and it's from all over the world too. The way they redid the theme, I can't remember the storm. I can't remember the guy that did it. Strom, maybe. I can't remember the guy that redid the theme, but like, he totally took the synth out and did it all on piano.
Oh, wow.
And totally, I was just like, oh, this is so well done. And I can't think of his name right now, which really bothers me because I like usually can tell you who scored anything.
Right.
But that theme was so good. And just doing the piano run, going up and down, and then just doing the scale. I was like, it's so cool. And the drums are gone. So it's literally just kind of like some synthy background, a little bit of string, and then piano.
I love
it. It totally makes it modern. I was like, this is so good. Like, so good.
I love it.
But anyway, other themes, I don't know, Jaws, I mean.
Yeah, well, you know what? We could even talk about, like, is Jaws a horror movie?
I mean, I always, when I saw it.
I'm not giving an opinion.
I know. I considered it to be a horror movie. I mean, I was like 7. My mother wouldn't let me watch it. And my dad at the time was like, I want to see Jaws, you know? And my dad was like, oh, yeah, well, you'll learn. Then you'll watch Jaws. Like, he would be like, I don't care. Watch it. And then you'll be scared for the rest of your life or whatever. My mom was like, oh, no, shield him from this. So one day, you know, it's on HBO, whatever. I was like 7 or 8. You know, my dad's like, my mom's in bed. I was in bed. He comes upstairs. He's like, hey, Jaws is on TV. I'm like, he's like, don't tell your mother. You know, I'm like, okay. So I get up and go downstairs and watch it. Right. And it's like, scared the shit out of me. This that opening scene, though. And she's like being dragged. All, I mean, that, how is that not like a horror movie? I mean, like, maybe because of the year and how old I was when I saw it. I consider
no,
it that,
I mean, but. I'm going to agree with you. I've heard on 2 separate podcasts now, and like I've seen in Reddit discussions, like whether or not Jaws is considered a suspense or thriller or a monster movie, some people call it.
Well, I guess, yeah.
Or a horror movie.
Well, what do you think?
I think it's a horror movie.
I think it is.
Like, I think it's horror. Like, I think if you put, if it, like a horror movie to me, like if you can. I mean, I guess it works for thriller as well, but like, put yourself in that situation.
Yeah, sure. Like that's scary
is
shit,
that a horror movie? Yes,
I was afraid of that bathtub. I mean, I didn't want to be in any water.
We had a swimming pool, and it was, you know, not like a, it was an in-ground pool with like lights and like you could see, you see everything, you know, it's not like this, like.
Well, it would have been better if it was dark.
And it was in the middle of Vermont, and I basically would not go in that water after dark when I was a little kid because I'm like, that might be a shark, you know, might be a fucking shark.
Lakes? I thought lakes. I was like, oh, there's a shark in the lake, even though there's salt water. You know, yeah. No, there's sharks in the lake.
Yeah, so yeah,
I can't see the bottom.
It's a horror movie.
Jaws is going to get me.
And the music, without question, saved that movie because, like, it was famously plagued with mechanical issues where the shark was a piece of shit.
Right.
And
which you don't
work.
Really see until the Blu-ray comes out because then, like, in HD, you're like, wow, that's a really cheesy shark.
And it didn't work, like, 70% of the time because, like, it worked in theory and then they'd get it in the water and it's, like, all these gears and shit and then they're like, you know, there's algae in the gears. Sure, we can't get it, you know, and, like, you know, so they used the music.
Right.
And like the point of view, the point of view camera, and those 2 notes.
I know
that's how you got the tension.
That's great though. But I'm saying, like, on my 19-inch TV though, in my bedroom, you know, I couldn't see all the cheesy shit. It was scary.
Yeah,
so
it's scary. And that music does not lie.
No, it does not.
Like when you hear that music, that is the shark.
You know, and it speeds up, and it just go like, you know, you know what's
and,
up.
Yeah. So
but that's what's so great about John Williams. I mean, like, he's just such a versatile composer. I mean, so many themes that are just recognized. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think he's one of the best composers ever.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, I mean, I think we've talked about, and, you know, I don't want to, like, give promotions to other podcasts, and I'm saying it like that, not that I can't remember the name of the show.
Okay.
No, I can't remember the name of the show. But anyway, there was a podcast that was went into like soundtrack, you know, movie soundtracks, and like broke down like each movie in like hours long.
Yeah,
and
I should
like,
have done that.
You know,
I don't know why I didn't think of that. I would have loved
it's
to
not,
have done that.
I mean, do it. You know,
all right. Well, I mean, I could, but it's like it's already been done. So like,
but who fucking cares, man? Like, who cares?
I know,
like,
but it's like somebody else thought
everything
of that.
Has been done. You think this is a like I didn't invent a podcast yet? Here we are.
But you're an original.
You know?
You
know, no, I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm not
original.
Fucking original at anything.
All right,
like,
you're a fraud.
I'm a fraud, 100%.
I'm riding the coattails.
Yeah, like, no, you should. Like,
it's like Friday the 13th based off of Halloween. Like, this is what we're doing. Like, it's
exactly.
Continuing it.
I remember, like, marketing 101, like, day one, the teacher comes in and basically says, like, all right, you know, rule number one of marketing, if it's not your idea, steal it.
You're right.
And they were like, that's how it works.
Right, sure.
And she was like, that's how... You know, when McDonald's does something, within a week or two, Burger King is doing the exact same thing. Like, that's how it works. So, like, you should do it, but do it better.
Maybe.
Maybe. And he just did all movies.
Right, sure.
I mean, you could maybe put a focus on horror movies.
Yeah, or just did set different set, you know, different different months, you know, or different episodes for different genres.
And, sure.
But then I would sit there and probably play along with some of them, though.
He does
like,
as well.
Oh, does he? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. He has a piano right there.
All right, well, see.
And, like, when he explains stuff, he goes, ding, ding, ding.
Yeah,
ding.
I was like, all right, well, I'm going to play better pieces then. All right, that's what it.
There you go.
I have to play, like, the flight theme from E.T. or something that's, like, really complicated.
And, again, I didn't say the name of that other guy's podcast, so.
He doesn't even exist to me.
He's dead to me now.
Never even heard of him.
I don't even know.
What are we talking about?
I don't know. All right, so we're gonna wrap it up here and get back to the spooky stuff. So, Andy, thank you so much for coming over and talking horror movies and music and just you know being a friend, man.
Absolutely, thank you, Andy. We have a great name.
Yeah. Totally. We do have a great name. It's fantastic. All right. So that is Andy Iorio, and you can find him on Spotify, and I will link to your music on the show page.
Awesome.
All right. So that was my conversation with Andy Iorio. Make sure you check him out on Spotify. And I have a lot more to come, and this is just part one of this two-part Halloween episode. And I do still have my conversation coming up on this episode with Kate and Mike of Lucid Street, and we're going to hear their brand new single that comes out this weekend. We're going to get to hear it ahead of the release on this episode. But right now, let's listen to some more 518 music that is got that Halloween theme to it. This is Party to Your Grave, and it's Matthew Ryan Lowry here on Unsigned 518's Halloween special.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Maddie from Nerdy by Nature. Come on down to 99 Ferry Street to our new downtown Troy location. Shop some oddities, haunted antiques, 15 small makers and vendors. We're open every day but Monday and Tuesday at 99 Ferry Street. Come on down.
That was Millington with the Halloween song. Before that, Matthew Ryan Lowry with Party to Your Grave here on Unsigned 518 Halloween episode. Thank you so much for listening and sticking around thus far. We've got a little bit more to go in this episode. Then there's a whole other part too. Like, this is just the first part of the Halloween special. So make sure that you listen to part two if you can. You know, I don't want to pressure you, but if you got time in your day, you could listen to both parts. We've got some great music and segments. And in part two, there'll be a conversation with Maddie of Nerdy by Nature. You just heard him do a promo in between the songs there. Also, we're going to be going to the original Camp Arawak, the filming location of the 1983 slasher classic Sleepaway Camp, which was filmed in Argyle, New York, just a couple miles down the road from my house. And I got permission from the owner to go on location and do a segment there. So we're going to do a little talking. I brought Nick Kosser of Gozer along with me. And then there's also a video component. So you'll be able to, if I get my shit together, I'll upload it over to YouTube. And you'll be able to go over to YouTube and check it out there. So that's coming up on part two. Also music, a lot of music coming up on part two, including another premiere. It's a song that actually is available right now, but it came out at the exact second that this podcast dropped. It came out right at the stroke of midnight on Halloween, and it's the latest single from Michael Dillinger. He's the lead singer of Gozer, and he has a solo project out. It's called Revenant, and it'll be the premiere. The song is available now, so you can go stream it everywhere. The song is fucking kick-ass, and I actually, when I was talking to Michael today, when he first sent the song over, he let me know that I am the first person to hear the song in its entirety, and that means you'll be right along, you know, you'll be some of the very first. It's a great fucking song. I expect good things from it. So that's coming up again on part two. Also, other music as well. I've got some songs from I've got Pine Boys, I've got a Gozer tune in there as well, the Dillinger song, an Adigato song in there as well. So go check that out. Episode 2 is available right now. And now let's go to the Dazzle Den, actually where I am now, but let's rewind a couple days ago when Mike and Kate of Lucid Street came over. They have a new single that's available this weekend, and it's their first studio single. They have a couple of live ones, and they came over to talk to me about that. But also, Kate is really into horror movies, so we talk a little bit about that as well. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with my conversation with Kate and Mike of Lucid Street here on Unsigned 518's Halloween special.
What's up, everybody? This is writer-director here from upstate New York, Frank Palangi, bringing you guys a new horror film this season called Souls of the Damned. It is my third independent horror movie. You guys can check out that movie on Tubi, as well as the other movies, The Lost Chronicles and The Killer Tales, all streaming for free. So guys, if you can go and check it out, I hope you have a nice and scary Halloween. Check out Palangi Films, and I will see you guys soon.
All right. Welcome back. I am here live in person in the Dazzle Den with Kate and Mike of Lucid Street. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
So, you know, we want to talk about, you have a new single, and it's the first studio single, because you have a couple of singles that were recorded live.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But this is like the first studio one, and I actually, as we're talking now, I haven't even heard it, so when we play it on the show, it'll actually be my first time hearing it too, which is going to be
good.
Yeah,
super cool. But so we do want to talk about that, but because it is a Halloween episode, and we were just talking before we got rolling, not part of the show or anything, but I want to kind of pick up the conversation about horror movies. You know, we were talking a little bit about the psychology, or what did you say you took?
I took philosophy of horror in college. It was like such a fun class.
And the entire class was just, was it like horror and jet? Was it horror movies?
It was all horror movies. Yeah, it was so fun. Like, it was, we watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Exorcist, The Shining, Scream, Scream 2, Halloween. Like, and most, I'm a horror movie person, so I'd seen almost all of the ones that were assigned. We did Night of the Living Dead. We did, like, the original Dracula. Like, it was just so fun to bounce around in Psycho and see, like, the old ones and the new ones and the ones that the people who study the philosophy of horror, which I didn't even know was a thing.
I'm a horror guy, and I was like, I didn't even know it was a thing.
Like, there are philosophers who specifically do that, but, like, the movies that they pick out as being the most influential ones that really use horror itself, because I think some of them are so, like, jump scary and just, right, like, focused on that they don't have, like, the longevity that the ones that I just mentioned have. So, like, they don't really analyze, like, the ones that are kind of just, like, flings, I guess I would say.
And it's interesting, too, because, like, a lot of, you know, like, I say I'm, like, really into horror, and everybody, like, assumes that that just means blood and guts, and that's, like, really not.
No.
They're like, not it at all. Like, because I'm with you too. Like, there's some movies that I'm like, it's too fucking gimmicky.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, some of it, if it's campy, like, I love campy shit, but, yes, like, it has to be done right. But, like, I don't want to see, I'm not watching a horror movie just to see blood and guts.
No.
And, like, but, like, every movie you mention, I'm like, classic,
yep,
classic, classic, classic. Like, all the good ones.
Weird thing. Like, you, do you have, like, those memories of being a kid that just kind of, like, glare out at you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, random things that just cut through, right? So I remember being like 7 and being home with a bad ear infection right around Halloween, and it was back when we all still had cable and Sci-Fi did the Halloween, like, movie marathon thing. So my mom was home and she was sick too, and at first we were just watching, like, Halloween or something. We both fell asleep. I woke up and she was still asleep, and Hostel was on.
Ugh.
And I was like 7 and I, like, watched it by myself, and it still sticks with me. And it's so funny because, like, I dealt with that at such a young age and it didn't bother me. I was just like, wow, that's gruesome. Like, and now I'm like, okay, yeah, the torture stuff really isn't for me.
It breaks my cardinal rule of horror movies,
yeah,
and that it has to be fun.
Now, you know what?
Torture is not fun.
No.
You know what ones are weird for me with that, though? Terrifier. Like,
I love Terrifier.
Yeah. Like, I thought it was all torture, and I was like, no, I can't do it, right? So
it's goofy as shit.
Yeah. Like, and I watched. Now, the first one, I think, is more on the torture side. I didn't
have. It's a little meaner.
Yeah. I didn't have as much of an appreciation for the first one as I did the second one. But the first one, I just watched little clips of because I was like, I can't get through all this torture stuff.
Right.
And even though I watched the worst scenes, ironically. But. And then I was like, okay, I don't think this franchise is for me. Then the third one came out. Everyone's talking about it. So I said, okay, I talked to people. They said, no, the second one's totally different. It has a plot. The acting is supposed to be really campy. It's really funny. And I said, okay. So I watched the second one. And as soon as Sienna came on the screen, I was like, I love her so much.
I've seen, like, kids dressed as her for, like, Halloween this year. And I'm like, how the fuck does that kid know who she is? You know,
yeah,
like, you'll see, like, 8 and 9, like, one of my buddies, his kid is 9, mm-hmm, and his classmate is Art the Clown. And
I
I'm
know.
Like, how does he even know who Art the Clown
is?
Yeah.
You know?
But I was shocked with the second one. Like, the plot was really good. The character building was great.
And it was,
like,
fun.
It was, like, fun. You know? There's one scene that sticks out in your head that every once in a while you think about it and you're like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, and I know you know exactly what scene I'm talking when she's like, mommy, and you're like, oh,
yeah,
that's the one that killed me. But everything else, I mean, the rest of the movie was amazing.
Yeah. And again, it's fucking gross, but it's
it's terrible.
Fun, but it's fun.
But the,
you know?
What's so impressive about it to me is the way that Howard Thornton can act on the clown, because he doesn't speak. You know, and he has, like, the facial expressions, and to be able to do some of the facial expressions he does while doing the complete opposite of, like, the thing he's doing, you know, it's like he's, like, cutting someone's head off while, like, looking so excited about it. And it's really campy, and I love it.
My favorite was in part one when they're in the pizza shop and he does the, like, you know, the little girl, like, the hand, and, like, bats his eyes and tilts his head, and you're like, oh my God.
I love the glasses when he, in the Terrifier flower glasses. Too. Yeah. And I saw, so my cat, his name is Boo, and he, funny segue, actually, because Potential Redemption's about him.
Oh, no way.
But, so he's a travel cat, is what I call him. He's like a cat dog. He likes to go places and do things, and because that's just, I've had him since he was 3 weeks old, and I found him in Binghamton when I was in school there, so we were, like, going back and forth all the time, and he's just chill. You know, he's just used to it. So I took him out one day, and... I took him out one day and we went to Spirit Halloween and they have an art, like, animatronic thing.
Oh, right. Yeah, I've seen those.
And he wasn't scared of it at all. Like, it just moves. It's not one of the ones that jumps or anything. I didn't bring him in front of one of those ones, but he's in his little bag and I have this video of him and he's just looking at him and I swear if like I could read his mind, I think he was going, hey, that guy's colored like me. Like, because he's a tuxedo cat. He's like, what's he wearing?
Okay, I like the black and white look. That's nice.
Yeah, he's just, know? Like, looking at him. But then everyone is like, oh, he's so scared. I'm like, trust me, I know my cat. He's not scared at all.
Calvin, whom we just heard make a guest appearance barking his ass off, he's definitely scared. Like, because I've got, if you see up there, I've got, like, the Michael Myers and the Leatherface and, like, all the masks and shit. And if I put one of those on, he will lose his mind. Like,
oof.
It's, like, uncomfortable how scared he gets immediately. Even when he sees me put it on.
Poor guy.
No
object permanence. Yeah,
no, Calvin will Calvin will lose his shit.
He takes it literal.
Yeah,
that means danger. Mask means danger.
Totally. Then he'd be gone. He'd be gone.
He's not one of the people in the movies that goes, let's go towards the danger. No, run from danger.
He's like fucking real life Scooby Doo.
Calvin, you know, like, is not the blonde girl, the dumb blonde in the horror movie.
No, Calvin is running away and getting stoned in the van. It's probably more like where he would be at. So, you know, you said that Potential Redemption is about your cat.
Yeah.
It is.
So tell me a little bit more about that.
So, Billy, our keyboardist, we were at Mike's house. And you know?
We just got done with practice, too. It was a practice night.
No, you know what I just realized, though? I think it was right after our last interview here. Because remember, we went up and played at Bebop's that night. And the videos we were trying to watch were from Bebop's.
I know you were definitely going to a show
and
right
from here.
And we were
going to Lake George from here.
Or were we
that.
There the night before?
No, we were going to Lake George from here.
Because we had a show the night before.
I think Potential Redemption might have been written the day after we were here last time.
No way.
So
it might have been like a Sunday night we wrote that.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Because Billy and I went over to your house. And yep. So what happened, we were trying to watch videos from the show that we were going to after the last time we were here. And airplaying them to the TV, and they weren't streaming, they weren't airplaying. And Mike said, all right, Potential Redemption, let's try one more time. And Billy and I looked at each other and we said, that's a song title. Let's go to the piano. So we ran downstairs. We start, like, I said, we need a groovy song. Like, we have a lot of rock stuff. We need something more upbeat, poppy-ish. And that's just kind of, like, the train we went on. Mike came downstairs, and Mike was like, oh, you guys got something good. And at first, I knew Potential Redemption was the hook. So I was like, I need words that go with that. And I was just like, I wrote the chorus, and it wasn't specifically, like, about a certain thing yet. It was just, like, things that... Potential Redemption, got you coming for me. It was just like that. And then I wrote the verses, and I went, oh, okay, this song's kind of about my cat. So it's funny because everyone, I guess, if they didn't know, would think it's a love song. Like, we recorded our whole album with Nick Relation. Hi, Nick. And Nick said to me when we were going through the mastering, and he was like, yeah, you know, like, this song's like a love song. It's about, and I said, what? And he's like, yeah, you know, Potential Redemption, got you coming for me, you got the capacity to be for me. And I was like, Nick, the song's about my cat. And he's like, what? And I was like, yeah. So, I mean, it's, and yeah, and then it just that's how it became Potential Redemption.
And what made, like, you know, you've released the live stuff, like,
yeah.
And when you were writing this, were you like, this is the one that we're gonna take our time and do in the studio, or like, what made you decide to have this be the first studio single?
Well, we'd gone over a lot of different options, and we released the two live singles. We had ADD and we had Shades of Red,
which sound great, you know?
Thank you.
Thank you.
We kind of had to do those because we had gotten so much press and so much of a push in such a short amount of time that everyone was like, we want a product. And we were like, we don't have the money to record an album yet, so we'll record some live singles and hope it's good enough. So that's what we did. But I think we've always been planning to have, I mean, because those two songs are going to be on the album too.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've always been planning on having an album, but it was like we were having personnel changes and then maybe didn't have the right number of songs yet or and all that, you know, to put on an album, needed to write more and do writing in between regular life and playing other shows. So it's just been a long, like, drawn out kind of writing process.
Well, that's what kind of screwed the Putnam session stuff that we did, because we did a dozen songs. We had like 9 or 10 covers that we were going to do as well and release them, and we had them in full. And then we said, okay, we'll do the couple of originals to go with it, and that was the focus. The primary ones that we wanted to take audio order from those, the rest was going to be promo material. And because we needed stuff.
Right.
Because everybody comes in, where's your trailer? Where's your promo thing? Right. You know, everybody wants an EPK. And you're like, we don't really, like she said, we don't have anything. So the good news was that those two songs came out of that. We were working towards getting all those songs done. And, you know, it just ended up that, you know, we kind of picked this one to be the single. And it was from my perspective, it's kind of one of those, it's a balance of everything we do. It was a safe, smart pick for us because there's a lot of other songs that we would love to release as a single, and that one would be good. Or as Kate says on occasion, like, every week, I like this one.
Really?
Ooh, I like
every
this one.
Week,
ooh,
I'm
I like this one. I like this one.
This one could be a hit. And I'm telling you, this one's going to be the hit. And then, like, the next week we'll go, and I'll be like, hey, you know that really, like, laid-back one that we're putting at the end of the album? Like, what if we released it as a single? And everyone's like, no. And I'm like, but it could be a hit. Like, so
right.
I do it with every song on the album.
Right, that's why we're, you know, like, concentrating, saying, no, we got maybe two singles in us, because timeline is, and this is why it's perfect, is that we'll have this one out on the 2nd. We might have another one out. But the primary focus for us is to get the album out by early
January-ish.
First quarter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. First couple months of the year. January would be the perfect habitable zone.
Sure.
You know, but
after the holidays, because you don't want to release during
right.
the holidays.
That's exactly what we were yeah. thinking. And we're really excited. We're opening for Marillion in Montreal.
Oh, wow.
In March.
Fucking
March.
International. Going
yeah.
international.
Yes, we are.
So, and we'll be playing to like a couple thousand people. It's going to be crazy. But we really wanted to have like an album out at that point. You know, you want to be able to sell physical things when you're there.
And all our merch, you know, because we said, okay, we have some merch, which, you know, we gave you new shirts, but we, you know, yeah. we have album specified merch that we wanted to kind of put out with it. And with the single, we got some stickers with it and we got a bunch of other stuff. And
so we'll have like a little exclusive merch thing. We're having a single release party the same day the song's coming out, November 2nd. It'll be at Lost and Found from 8 to 12.
In Albany,
yeah. And the first 24 people are going to get a free, like, merch goodie bag. So it's like a Potential Redemption bag and a shirt and a sticker. But it's only, like, while the supplies last. Like, we only have enough for 24 people.
They were handmade.
They were. Handmade. I made all of
they
them.
They were handmade.
And that's this Saturday at Lost
yes.
and Found.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
And, oh, and there's a bracelet. Our nice. Thing that we kind of have been slow. The thing is we've been teasing this album for so long and no one even knows. It's so funny. Like, I feel like once it comes out, people like would scroll through our Instagram feed and be like,
oh, there's
been
little
telling
hints.
Us for forever. Like, this, it's so weird. I can't explain how it happens. It's almost like the way like the band got its name, like, because Lucid Street just hit me. Like, I was just walking in the rain, and I was like, Lucid Street's a good name for a band, and that's just how we did it. Like, so I don't know why it seems like this album is, like, oh, you know, like, the street theme, but, like, black and white, graffiti, like, it just kind of seemed like the thing. And then, like, the doing, like, the friendship bracelets are popular right now, but, like, doing, like, the friendship bracelets for each of the songs, just, I don't know why that just seemed right to me. And that's kind of like how we're revealing the songs. Like, if you go, now everyone knows, but if you go and look, there's a picture on our Instagram of my arm with 10 bracelets on, and one says Lucid Street. The top one is just turned a little bit, so you see the PO of Potential Redemption, and the others are turned around. And then when we revealed that the song is going to be called Potential Redemption, it was a picture of just that bracelet and the Lucid Street bracelet.
This goes back to your horror talk where, you know, you're watching the movie, is it happening? And then you go back the second time and you go, wait a minute, they've been up to something.
Yeah. The signs were there the whole time.
Yeah. They didn't tell us.
So I like the friendship bracelet thing. And I also think just looking at it from like a person who's always in like marketing mode, right? Like you give people bracelets or they buy a bracelet or whatever. It's one of those things that they'll be wearing. So they'll be thinking about it. And like if people ask them, then they're talking about it. Like I almost like the idea better than like a sticker, because a sticker, like, you know, it might go on your fridge or it might go somewhere where someone's not seeing it all the time. But if it's something that you're wearing, then like everyone's going to be seeing it.
Right, unless you're Woody the Woodpecker, then your refrigerators are always running, but, you know.
Yeah, another good merch idea that I saw someone was talking about that is car air fresheners.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can order. Yeah, it just hangs there, and you could literally just have it be, like, your logo on one side or, like, a QR code on the other side or whatever. Like,
we're big
like
with
that.
The QR code. We put the QR code on, like,
it's
everything.
On everything. Yeah, yeah. It's on our posters. Yeah. It's on our stickers. It's on every event thing that we do.
I mean, got them on the back of my business cards.
Yeah, I put them on the business cards as well, you know, and everybody's like, oh, that's a nifty idea. And I'm like, I think of this as commonplace.
It just makes sense.
It does make sense.
Nowadays, you know, like you see, like, there's that new business card company, Dot, and basically there's like nothing on it. Right. You tap it and it takes you to everything there.
So there was, and I can show you when we're done with the episode, but I was at this festival up in Canada called Gussapalooza a couple weeks ago. And there was a company that had, it was like a little CD jewel case with a little CD in it. And you tap that to the phone and it takes you to their official Spotify playlist.
That's so cool.
And it's
cool.
Like, it, you know, it's just this little keychain with a CD that looks fucking cool anyway.
That's awesome.
And if you tap your phone on it, you know, they're like, here's our playlist. So like, cool shit like that.
But people like the physical stuff. Like, you know, like if you can interact with something, whether it's on a phone or the back of something or a cover, or it looks like something like a CD, it's physical,
and
you
also,
know?
And also
people like that.
The less people have to type, you know.
Right.
What I mean? If you're like, oh yeah, just here's the QR code. It's done for you.
Yeah.
Rather than, hey, my website is www. Like, you know.
Right. And I can't tell you how many times like I've handed out a business card or I've had one left, and I'm like, hang on, just scan the QR code and just go with that before I can go refill.
Yeah.
So it keeps my business cards, you know, my quantities, you know, nice and high.
Thing too, you said like with physical stuff, it made me think like physical copies of like the single and everything. That is the weirdest thing now, like with releasing music the way music is consumed now, because it was like we were just talking, because Queen remixed and mastered their first album with AI, and it sounds amazing. They were able to separate all the tracks and do what they wanted to do with it, and we were listening to it on the way up. And it's like the way music was mixed and mastered at that point was because people were going to be listening to it on vinyl.
Right.
Then it changed to CDs. Then it changed to streaming. And now vinyl's making a comeback. So like that's one weird, and we will have vinyl of our album and of the single. We're taking pre-orders of the single right now. And we will have those up on our website, and we will have those at the show that you can pre-order one of the like 45s.
Cool.
And it'll be Yeah, we got the little ones, the singles. And the B-side is going to be one of our songs that we haven't released yet. It's a live version of one of our songs that'll be on the album from this past summer. So that'll be really cool. But
and that's the only way to hear that song.
Yeah, right. It will not be on the Spotify one. Yeah.
It will not be on Spotify. Yep.
Yep.
And but that's one of the really odd things that we were talking with like Nick, our sound engineer, about is it's like you're almost like mastering your track in like two different ways because it needs to sound a certain way on vinyl, but it needs to sound a certain way for Spotify. So it's like that's one of those behind the scenes things that we're dealing with like as artists that like nobody thinks about. Right. You know what I mean?
I know our producer would listen to it, you know, in the studio speakers. He would listen to it on his phone.
Mm-hmm.
He would go out in the car and listen to it. He would listen to it on like some little desktop speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yep, that's what we you know, did
listen
too.
To it in all these
because there's so many formats you can listen to now. I mean, the Bluetooth speakers have come a long way. I mean, like some of the like the Ultimate Ear Booms are, you know, like they're the top line, and you look at the JBLs and stuff like that. Yeah, they're really nice, you know, but if you're listening to it on that, the good test is there's a lot of high end. You're going to get all the vocals on that. So if you're listening to see how that comes out, you're not going to get the low end frequencies. You're not going to get all the bass response. So if you have your desktop speakers, okay, then you do. So as compared to back in the day, you know, in talking about formats, yeah, where did you listen to music back in the day? It was in your car, at home, and that was basically
it. And if
it
was in your car, you weren't choosing what you were listening to. Unless it was an 8-track.
Right, unless it was 8-track, yeah.
Which were fucked up because they would cut off in the middle of the song.
Right, yeah. Rush's Moving Pictures. Mm-hmm. Camera eye cuts out at 4 minutes in, and then you had to switch it.
It's like, God damn, man.
Yeah.
Like, and I was dealing with that shit in real... I'm old enough where I was dealing with that shit in real life, in real time. I mean, I was like, you know, 5 or 6 years old, but even then I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Like,
I was really into that Steppenwolf tune. You know?
Yeah. No, it's weird, though. It really is odd. I mean, it's fun. And honestly, as an artist, it's really refreshing to see vinyl coming back because we were looking the other day when we were, you know, uploading our... We use CD Baby to publish our work and everything. And we're like, wow, in the year that these singles have been out, we've made $7.06. It's like being able to sell physical copies is just going to be so refreshing because then it's like the money actually goes back to the source.
Right. Mm-hmm. And plus, even if like vinyl and physical stuff, even if somebody doesn't have the medium to play it, like even if someone's like, I don't have a record player to play it, like it's still a cool thing to have.
And I've had a couple people reach out because they're like, oh, what are you releasing?
Right.
Like my uncle was asking me about it, and he's like, you know, I'll take two copies. I'm like, great. I go, but you don't have a turntable. And he goes, I don't care.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like that. I mean, and it's... And you are right. Like the last, I think for the last 2 or 3 years, maybe even longer, vinyl has outsold CDs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have a turntable set up in the living room. And I don't have a CD player anywhere in this entire house.
And if you're a music connoisseur, if you're a music connoisseur, like, you can listen to it in your car, on your phone, on your AirPods, wherever you want music. And that's the great thing is that if you want to listen to somebody, you have the ability to do it anywhere and find anyone you want. So actually, in a way, it's kind of gone back to being like it was in the 70s. If you wanted to go find an artist, you got to go looking or, you know, listen to something 100 times or, hey, similar artist to this, like this. So it's kind of cool because then you can go in and find that artist and then you can attach yourself to what they're selling and it's great. But if you're at home and you just want to listen to music, and you like that band, and you're into what they're doing, I got a whole album.
Yeah. There's just something about dropping a needle on a record.
There is. It's physical.
Better.
And, you know,
and it's funny
with your real speakers, and sounds great.
Our audio engineer will be like, yeah, but you hear the needle, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like,
But
like,
the imperfections are my imperfections. Like, that's how I know it's my record. You know what I mean?
But it's
like,
not...
when I'm listening to the Clash Combat Rock, and when it's going on the, you know, he thinks it's not kosher, the third time he says it skips. And, like, it's not bad, but, like, it's mine. It's my copy. You know what I mean?
It's
so, like, I
only...
love the imperfections.
Yeah, not only that, but there's something, like, nostalgic in a good way. Like, almost like Christmas nostalgic of like hearing like the sound of the record.
The
like I enjoy it. Like I enjoy having it in with my music, and it's not just with like old vinyl as well. Like, I've been buying some newer vinyl recently, like Sabrina Carpenter and Chapel Roan, and like, I even enjoy listening to theirs on vinyl more than I do on Spotify. It's fun.
It's direct to the source, you know. It's direct contact with everything. And it's not to put away, you know, the ease of, you know, what CDs did, you know, compact disc. You're shrinking everything. I mean, so there is something there to that. And it's the experience factor. Again, back to the physical touch.
Right. Yeah.
People want that because in a digital world, reverting back to being the experience of holding the vinyl up and reading the lyrics there, you're like, oh, it's an experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if there's any way to gain fans and stuff like that, or to gain that following, if you don't have a shtick or whatever, at least if you put out a cool product and you can read along with it,
give them that experience.
You give them an experience, and then you go, I wonder if these guys could recreate that live.
Right. And one thing I'm really excited about talking about creating, like, you know, the experience and everything too, is like, I wrote all the lyrics for the album, right? And each of the songs is very,
not
like,
all the songs.
Yes, I did.
One song is an instrumental.
That's true, but I mean, but what I said is true. All the lyrics on the album I wrote. So I'm planning on doing, and I'll do the first one, will come out the Friday, November 1st. But I'm going to do, yes.
as this episode airs.
Yes. So I'm going to do kind of like a little sit down video type thing for each of the songs. So I'll do it for this one, for what's probably going to be another single. And then for the, songs as the album comes out, I'll probably take like a little break, and like I'll do it as the album's coming out, maybe like half before the album, half after the album, maybe something like that. But I'll do little sit down videos and be like, okay, hi everyone, so let's talk about this song, and let's talk about these lyrics and what it's about and what this is about, and just give like a little background. And I think it'll be fun because I want people to interpret the lyrics to the song as whatever makes it most meaningful to them. But some of the songs also really helped me get through difficult times in my life. And some of them are also, you know, kind of like the calm after the storm and really refreshing. And it's, you know, it depends on the song. And I just like the idea of being able to be more like personal with people and share that with them. And it's just like a way to make people like understand it better, I guess.
Because they're going to form their own relationships and bonds to the songs.
For sure.
If the, you know, if you're reading along to lyrics, you know, because there is that crowd of people out there that's, you know, want to attach themselves to it because, yeah, sure, our music is very good, you know, but the words, you know, especially for me as a listener, you know, and as a drummer, and I've told you, like, some of my drum parts, you know, I establish some of my fills based on what you're doing.
Yeah.
Or based on what Billy's doing on keyboards, or based on certain licks that are in the solos that Nolan is using. So, you know, like, you know, I want to be able to feel it, you know, and other people, I'm sure, want to attach themselves to it in some way, shape, and form as well.
I think it's that also, like, as a lyricist, I'm very inspired by Ronnie James Dio and Freddie Mercury and Stevie Nicks and like that kind of vibe, I guess. Definitely Mariah Carey too. Mariah and Whitney, very inspired by the way they write their music, and especially Mariah, Freddie, Ronnie, really big on the metaphors, and Stevie. And I love putting a good metaphor in a song. Like, there are some metaphors that, and I'm assuming this is the way Ronnie would be with some of his too, that I'm like, I don't even really know what that means.
You just did it.
It just you sounds know what it feels so like. Cool. Yeah. And I know, like, yeah, you know what it feels like. And it's more like there's one that I'm anticipating in one of our songs, because we haven't released that title yet. Like, one of my favorite lines I've ever written is, there are diamonds in the flowers just like teardrops in the rain. And I don't know what the fuck that means, but it goes perfectly with, like, the vibe of the song. And I just, it's, I don't know why. If I had to pick one line of one of our songs that I'm, like, the most proud of, it might be that one.
And you get, you know, curious, you know, just let the listeners, and that's the cool thing as an artist, you know, you do it for you, but you're always curious, what is somebody going to say? What is somebody going to do with this? You know, like, curious, like, besides the point of, are they going to like it or hate it? You know, but, like, when you attach yourself to it, you know, what's going to be the response? Did they like the drumming? Did they like the guitar playing? Or what line from that song was their favorite? Or
right.
Why did they choose this
way
to
God,
do that?
That's all that goes through my head right now, you know? With Potential Redemption coming out. Oh, my God. Like, I texted Mike the other day. I said, Mike, like, do you think everyone's gonna like it?
Yeah, I hope people are gonna like it.
I hope we pick the right one, because that's the thing, is it's like, yeah, if we wanted to release all of the songs on the album as a single over however long amount of time, right, we totally could. But you only get your first single, like your first studio single and your first real like mark on the original scene once. You only get your first album once, and you only get your first single once. And I'm just sitting here going, yeah, like there are other songs that would be great singles on this album, but I just hope we picked the right one to be the first one. And I hope everyone really likes it, because I really like it.
and we all unit, and back to what, you know, your original question with it, like we all unanimously kind of said, no, that is the one. Like we had other ones in mind. We all kind of knew, and it's the perfect crossover, because it's technical enough, but not too technical. It's poppy enough, but not too poppy. It's catchy, and it's right to the point, and it's, you know, below 4 minutes.
Right.
Perfect structure for listening. You know, you could play it on the radio. You can play it live, and it basically is there. You know, it's got hooks. It's got all sorts of hidden things that you can go back and listen to a second, third, fourth time. And on first listen, you can go, oh, it's catchy. So there are multiple layers, whereas some of the other songs are going to be like, oh, that sounds good.
We like to say, yeah, for Potential Redemption, that it's if, yes, Aretha Franklin and Elton John wrote a song together. Mm. And if we were doing it like live, that still stands. But then after I did the vocals in the studio, you got an element of the Muses from Hercules for like the backup vocals. So it's like the Muses from Hercules sang on a song with Aretha Franklin, Elton John, and yes.
Yeah, well, I want to hear it. I think we should hear the song.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
We gotta get back to the spooky shit too. It's like, but so is there anything? So it comes out. It's everywhere.
November 2nd.
Today is Halloween.
Yep.
So today's the 3rd. So it comes out the day after tomorrow. It comes out Saturday.
Yep.
So is it a midnight release?
Yep.
Like,
yeah, it'll be midnight. Right? Yep, it'll be midnight. And then, like I said before, Lost and Found release party.
And that's on Saturday as well.
On Saturday the 2nd. And from 8 to 12. So the first hour is going to be 8 to 9. That'll be like a listening party. Hang out with us. First 24 people getting their merch bag. And then those under 21 can stay until 10 p.m. And then there's a Albany Law School ID promotion. If you have your ID with you, you can get the White Claw promotion. And we will be doing merch giveaways and raffles and stuff throughout the night. So we'll have a bunch of merch with us and everything. It'll be super, super fun. And you can place your pre-orders for the physical single at the show as well.
Hell yeah. So that's this Saturday. The single comes out tomorrow at midnight. So, Kate, Mike, I want to thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. And we're going to get back to the Halloween episode. And right now, for the first time, let's hear Lucid Street's Potential Redemption.
Why you always bugging me? Gotta get-
That is Lucid Street with their first studio single, Potential Redemption. And you heard it first here on Unsigned 518's Halloween special. And that is it for part one. Part two is available right now, so you can just continue the fucking party over on part two. And I've got a lot of cool stuff, more music, more segments. And we're going to top it off with my visit to the original filming location of the 1983 slasher classic Sleepaway Camp, which I did with my good buddy Nick Kosser of the band Gozer. So that's all coming up on part two, which is available right now. Actually, probably in your stream, if you don't do anything, if you just let shit play, it'll just roll right into episode two. So check out episode two of my Halloween episode, and I'll see you there in a couple seconds. So I'm Andy Scullin. This is Unsigned 518.
And I'll see you on the road.
Unsigned 518 is produced and hosted by me, Andy Scullin. New episodes are available every week wherever you stream podcasts. If you'd like to help support the show, please like and subscribe wherever you are listening. Or you could buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/unsigned518. If you would like to advertise on the show, send me an email at unsigned518@gmail.com. And to be a guest on the show, reach out to me through Instagram at unsigned518. Take care of one another, and I'll see you next week.